Welcome to Trapping Across America, where fur brothers meet every week. Where we're still allowed to be men, and we're proud to be from the land of the fur and the home of the brave.
Locklear with Trapping Across America, and I'm doing the introduction tonight because Clint is actually the one being interviewed, and he's been interviewed by Norm Blackwell. And so I don't know if there's going to be any rant. There's not going to be a rant tonight by Clint because there might be ranting and raving in the interview. So we just want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and hope you guys had a great holiday like we did. And before we get started, we'll go over our sponsors.
And a great trapping season.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Ah, I can't remember what I'm supposed to say. And have a great trapping season. The first sponsor tonight is Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Their phone number is 540-298-7227. And they're at BlueRidgeOutdoorSupplies.com. Our next one tonight is WCS Wildlife Control Supplies. Proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to wildlife industry professionals. Their phone number is 877-684-7262. Their international number is 860-844-0101. Or you can reach them on the web at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. Our third sponsor tonight is Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Their phone number is 918-429-4648, and they can be reached at oktrapsupply.com. And finally, our last sponsor tonight is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Their phone number is 989-727-8727, or you can reach them on the web at fntpost.com.
Give her a big hand. Ooh, ooh, ooh. That wasn't so bad.
No, I'm an expert. What are you talking about?
If I need talking, we can come to you.
Oh. You heard it, people. You heard it. You heard what he said. Mark it down. What is today? December 27th, 2013. This day will live in infamy.
Well, before we get to the interview, it's... Norm did a good job, I thought, since he's the hostess with the mostest.
The hostess with the mostest?
Oh, yeah. He did a good job.
He's a hostess, as in hostess?
If you say so.
Well, what was he wearing?
I'm not supposed to say.
Oh. Okay.
We know pictures.
No pictures. Okay.
But I will say, he could have, I thought, it's funny, everybody that interviewed, because you've interviewed me, Possum's interviewed me, and Norm's interviewed me. And, right. And everybody's kind of like, I'm going to get you.
I didn't get you.
No, you didn't get me. You,
at all.
You could have. Probably. No. Possum's goal was to get me. But then he just absolutely freaked out when after he had to do like two questions.
Possum, you crumbled under pressure. You can't crumble under pressure.
And Norm was going to, he was acting like he was going to get me. Then finally he said, I know if I do, for whatever I come up with to make you look whatever.
Uh-huh.
That you always get me back tenfold, so.
That's right.
He kept it very professional. He did a good job.
Good. I can't wait to hear it.
I'm going to be the interviewer tonight. My name's Norm Blackwell. I'm here with Clint Locklear. Me and Clint's been friends for quite a few years, and...
Maybe not long.
That's a possibility. We know quite a bit about each other, and we give each other quite a hard time, so this might be an interesting conversation if I can get Clint to go along here a little bit. Clint, how'd you get started?
I got started with a Diet Coke or trapping?
Trapping.
Trapping. Okay. I got started in trapping.
Who you kidding, Diet Coke? Look at you.
Well, I guess really in fur-wise, it was shooting beaver in Alabama when I was in like 8th grade freshman, stuff like that.
Shooting beaver in the 8th grade?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tell me about that.
We would just... me and a couple of friends, there was a guy in Columbus, Georgia that paid somewhere around $30, $40 a beaver. We didn't know why. And we would go out and we would just find pawns. Looking back on it now, didn't know who they belonged to. When you get on the outskirts of Fincy, Alabama, and you're going north, there are just little ponds dotted everywhere up the road. So we just pull off because there wasn't fences, there wasn't any guardrails, Willie. Maybe it's a little big John boat, have a spotlight, get in there with a 22, shoot beaver. But at the time, I mean, you know, 9th grade, 10th grade, mm-hmm. shoot 5 or 6 beaver a night in those ponds, take them in, get $30 or $40 a piece back at that time. We're making some jack.
You're making more money than most adults.
Oh, my mom, when she found the roll of money, yeah, she threw a hissy fit. She thought I was in drugs. She thought I was in all kind of stuff.
I can imagine so. Now, when you talk about shooting these beaver, how would you retrieve them? Because normally you shoot a beaver, they die pretty, you know, quick. They go down to the bottom.
Well, some at the beginning, it was just, of course, you try to shoot them on the bank if you can. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have a big enough target to really know, so you just try to pop them. And I hear people talk about magazines where they clip their nose and all that, but you know, that to me, I guess they got a boat with a bench rest on it to be able to do that with a moving animal. But somehow, guys do it. We'd shoot them in the head. We lost a bunch of them when we first got started. And we went and got, if you've been frog gigging before.
Yeah.
You got normal frog gigs and you got big frog gigs. Mm-hmm. The ones that are about 5 inches wide, I don't know what they're really used for. We hooked that up on a piece of bamboo with duct tape, which you'll appreciate that knowing me.
Yeah.
And we would actually shoot the beaver because the ponds weren't that deep for the most part. And just till we felt soft, and then we would puncture the beaver in the backside of those spikes, would drag it up. And we put in the boat. The guy never said a word to us. We never even asked him what he was doing with them. I mean, it was like, you really gonna give us money? Here, you know, we'd take the money and just, we'd haul. Because we thought for sure he's gonna change his mind, because what's he gonna do with the beaver?
Yeah.
Because no one in my family had anything to do with trapping.
Your dad didn't trap, none of your brothers, nothing?
Nothing.
So you started out shooting beaver. When did you actually start setting traps?
When I was in the military in Fort Wainwright, Alaska.
Well, that's a nice place to start trapping.
It is. It's.
Did you have a teacher?
No. Dennis Murphy back then was Captain Murphy, and he wasn't really with me, but I knew him when I was up there, and he came in all excited one time about trapping, and I started asking him questions, because I mean, in Alaska, if it flew or had meat on it, I hunted it. Mm-hmm. And he started talking about that being in the dead of winter and how much money you could make, and you don't make any money in the Army. So I kind of paid attention, but I didn't do anything. Well, then he got deployed and all this other stuff, and he actually had a little bitty registered trap line on post. And he's like, well, if you want to try it, you know, go ahead. I'm not going to be using it. So me and Cindy went to, believe it or not, hardware stores and grocery stores and things like that where you can buy trapping supply in Alaska. And I bought lure. I think it was Safeway in Fairbanks, Alaska. The first quote mark lure that I had.
That was the name of it?
Yeah.
Okay. Who made that?
I have no idea. Okay. I mean, I really don't. And I mean, you could buy stretchers and trapping wire and 110s, and I mean, it was amazing, you know. And then I really didn't know what to do with any of it. And then we had a video store in town back when you still had video stores. And you walk in, again, being Fairbanks, it's backwards from everything else in the world. You had like 10% of the place was movies, like we call movies. 90% were hunting, fishing, trapping, fly tying, dog sledding, how to build a cabin with a chainsaw videos. I mean, that was 90% of it. And there was a video in there, Wilderness Trapping by Mike Lipinski, that was actually shot in Montana. And it had Martin, And the rule book said that there was marten in Alaska, so I got that. I watched how he did that in Montana, and I went and, not knowing anything about it, I set way too heavy. Didn't have a snow machine, anything like that. So luckily I was in shape when I was in the military. So my first line was like 10 miles on snowshoes. I had it split up into two different loops, filled a backpack with 110s and nails and a hatchet, and I went trapping. And the first trap I ever set in my life held a male marten.
That's great. Could you imagine trying to do that today? Walk 10 miles?
No. I don't want to do that, and I'm not even in snow.
Exactly. That's amazing. So that's how you got your start. Now, when I first met you and started learning about you and all the things that you've done, you know, in the beginning of all that at one time, you had your own business. You've kind of been an entrepreneur your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
You had your own business putting in swimming pools and all kinds of different things, but your swimming pool was the main thing. And I started seeing Clint Locklear's name out there, and he's traveling the countryside and catching all this stuff. And so obviously you decided to get out of the pool business. And, you know, I naturally assumed that there's no way with a man with an average income could just stop his job and travel and do all the things that you were doing. And obviously you were doing it because there's videos to prove it and back it up. And, you know, so when I found out a little bit more about you and I found out that you, you know, sold your pool business or just closed it down, my first thought was, okay, he got a pocket full of money from his pool business and all of his equipment, you know, or he's got a sugar mama at home that's just, you know, a doctor, lawyer, something, you know, because there's just no way that this guy can do all this stuff and not have money. And now, as I got to know you, kind of pick up from that and kind of tell us how you really, truly got started. Because that's the farthest from the truth.
Well, I'm amazed. People think I have more money than I do because I go do stuff like that. You know, I went trapping. You know, I did the videos. And I hear this, not just with me, but I hear it with anybody that's doing anything. People, it's almost like people use that as an excuse.
Yes.
Well, he had money when he started is the reason he could do it. You know, when was it you finally came up? It was on the way to Wisconsin this year.
Yes.
And you said that, and I just started laughing at you.
You did.
Because you thought that I had money to go do what I was doing.
Yes.
No. When I was in the pool business, I made a good living. Not a crazy living, I made a good living.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know anything about business per se the way a business owner would know about business. When I decided that I was going to go full-time trapping, I shut the doors. I didn't know you could sell a swimming pool business. Yeah. Never entered my mind. All I knew is I wanted to go trapping, and that's all I wanted to do. And I wouldn't have known how to sell a pool business, which looking back on that now is really stupid.
Right.
But I was younger. I mean, you just didn't know. I mean, when I got out of the Army, I went and I was a policeman for a while, decided I didn't like policemen very much. So then I didn't know what else to do because in the Army, they trained me how to jump out of airplanes and chase people down.
Yeah.
Well, society, when you get out of the military, kind of looks down on those two things.
Yes.
Especially when you combine them. So I didn't have, as far as real world skill, I didn't really have anything I wanted to do. My brother said he had a friend that built swimming pools. Mm-hmm. I've seen swimming pools. I've swum in swimming pools. It never entered my mind that someone had to build a swimming pool.
Okay.
I was, you know, young, strong, need money, but desperately needed money. So I went to work, and it was for like, if I remember right, $7.50 an hour. In the South, in the summertime, it was miserable. But after like 3 years, all the pools were the same. I learned how to, you know, do the excavating, lay out the pools, the plumbing. I mean, it was all the same. And after you do it a couple hundred times, my brain goes, why am I working for him now at a whopping $8 an hour when I can do the same thing? Surely goodness, he's making more money than $8 an hour.
See, now knowing you, anything mechanical just doesn't go along well.
Pools aren't mechanical. Pools are kids. I understand how transit works, I understand how water flows, I understand
you know, like concrete, we paid somebody to do concrete. Plumbing's pretty simple. I mean, I can cut and I can glue. You know, the way the laws were, it didn't make, you didn't have to wire stuff up because they wouldn't let you anyway. You had to pay an electrician to do it to be up to code. So the physical building of the pool, once you understand the leveling, all that wasn't that big a deal.
Okay.
You know, so I decided I was going to open cool pools. The guys working for it was laughing at me. You know, what do you know? You're just one of my, you know, grunts. I'll see you in 2 weeks and we're going to drop you back down to 7 an hour. That's what he told me.
Really?
Yeah. And I started, I went out and did the business card thing. I didn't know what I was doing. I finally figured out how to sell swimming pools. Within 2 years, his crew had to work for me if he wanted jobs, because once I figured out how to sell pools. And that was going good, except I didn't like going to people's houses. You start destroying people's houses in their backyard and bringing in machinery and all kind of stuff like that. And people really like pools till they got to write the last check.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're scrambling for some way not to have to pay that last check. And that part of it never did appeal to me. The phone always ringing. And I just wanted to go trapping. Because in the winter, luckily with the pool business, I could. I mean, I was trapping full-time, basically, way before I considered myself trapping full-time. Because as soon as you close the pools in the fall, you didn't touch a pool again until late spring. So I was trapping all winter long.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I was going to try to do it. I wanted to do it full-time, which was a lot of naivety in my part, if that's even a word. Because when I decided to go trapping full-time, I had the desire, the will, and the focus. We had no market. I didn't let that stand in my way. I mean, coons were like $6 average. Beaver, you were doing good to get over a $10 bill. Otters were 20. Bobcats were about 20. Coyotes was a laugh. You get $1 or $2 if you were lucky. Muskrats were $1.50. And I was going to go make a living.
See, and at that time, that's why I would think that a lot of people would say, okay, Clint obviously had some financial backing there somewhere.
No, I mean, if you're going to be as stupid as I was, you got to be really tough. And at that time, I was so focused, I could be tough because I was being really stupid. I mean, to do what I did. Because I should have figured out a way, be honest, I should have looked back and said, okay, we're just going to do swimming pool liners in the summer or something like that. Because, I mean, I walked away from the pool business, didn't touch another one, and I went trapping. And it was, we may have had $3,000-$4,000. We just didn't know anything about managing money. I mean, I had no idea about managing money. You make money, you spend money. You know, I just thought there'd always be money coming in.
How old was you at that time?
Oh, good grief. So I'm 44 now. Mid-20s.
Bulletproof.
Absolutely.
Headstrong.
Yeah.
Determined. A lot like you are today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I drank the Kool-Aid of Craig O'Gorman.
Yes.
You know, 100%. And that's all I could think about was, you know, you just do it.
Now I don't know if you can say on this or not, but you used to keep a note, sticky note, on your windshield.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I used to. Now keep in mind, and I can't say exactly what was on that note, because
right,
someone's going to get offended. You know, I grew up playing sports. Guys are kind of crude when they get around each other. I was in the military. I was airborne infantry. We weren't priests by any stretch of the imagination.
Absolutely.
Then I get out of that and I go into construction. So etiquette and couth has never been in my history. I mean, it just hasn't. And part of the thing when I forced myself to catch a ton of stuff because it wasn't worth a whole lot, I had a 3x5 card that was hot pink. that I would tape on the inside of my windshield right where I had to look at it every time I got in and out of the truck. And on that 3x5 card, I'm going to change the W from what it was, but it says, are you a wussy or are you a man? So every time I got back in that truck, I had to look at that, and you could not look at that hot pink card when you got in. And, you know, you get tired and you get in there, and that has a lot to do with the military side, you know.
Right.
Military does a lot of good things, but it'll screw you up in the head at the same time. If I had broke legs, I wouldn't be able to pee until they were fixed. Because, like in the military, what are you, squatting to piss? You know, kind of like some of the stuff me and you say to each other in different.
Right.
And I hear, you know, and I've heard women, wives talk about guys standing up, why don't they just sit down? There ain't no way. After hearing, you know, I mean, because that was like the absolute insult to a man, having to squat to pee.
Absolutely, there's pride involved.
So, and stuff like that from the military. So that card to me, every time I got in that truck in the morning, I had to ask myself a question. Am I going to be a wussy or am I going to be a man? And every time I got out of that truck. And what was worse was about 3 p.m. when you start just getting dog dead tired. Mm-hmm. And you'd be coming up with excuses why I need to get back home. Why I need to do, you know, I need to be doing this. And there was that little 3x5 challenging my manhood. Not there was anybody else to see it.
Right.
But in my mind, I mean, it was just like, and I would cuss that thing. Because I did not want, you know, I definitely didn't want to be the first thing.
Right.
You know, and I was wanting to be the second thing, and it wasn't easy.
Now, you've told me some stories, in our adventures this past year of places you used to stay. And there's one place that really comes to mind. You had to actually shovel rat poop out of the way had a place to lay down.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's something somebody with money would stay in, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, before that, before we get into that, because that's kind of like later on down the road.
Mm-hmm.
You asked me about going to O'Gorman's.
Yes.
And the first time I went to O'Gorman's, since I had all this money, I had it budgeted out. I knew what my wore-out six-cylinder Ford truck would get per miles. I knew how many miles it was to brought us. I didn't do any detours because I was afraid to. I literally had a coffee pot that I took with me. And I would pull into rest areas, and for breakfast, lunch, and dinner on the road, all I could afford at that time was ramen. And that ain't no joke, because I shouldn't have went to O'Gorman's because we didn't have the money to go to O'Gorman's. So all the way out to Montana was ramen. The only food I got is luckily at Craig's instruction, he fed you lunch and dinner when you were out there, but for breakfast I had ramen. Because I could buy a whole case of them, you know, at the grocery store and they didn't cost nothing.
Right.
So that's all that was. I get out there all the way back. That's all I've got to ramen. My tire on the Ford truck in St. Louis. Don't you keep it? You've been from Nashville to St. Louis.
Yes.
That's a long way.
It is.
I had a knot come up on my back tire on my truck. I had one spare. It was actually vibrating the truck so hard. And I knew it was going to come apart somewhere. But I only had one spare. I had no money. So I rode that knotty tire until it blew in Nashville, where all the traffic is. That's where it blew. Because I was afraid if I changed the tire in St. Louis when I realized what was going on, and I had another flat, I'm living somewhere else now. There was no more money. There was nothing. There was no savings that. It's funny, you know, people talk about savings and nest eggs and no, not living the way I was living. So and
it, no AAA.
Couldn't afford AAA. But have you ever seen the pictures when I had the red truck and I had that white box, looked like a utility box, and the door came open to the back?
Yes.
The tire was vibrating so hard by the time I got into Kentucky, I had to take duct tape, God is my witness, and wrap it around the whole box so the door would stay closed. So the duct tape's around the box. The tire blows in Nashville. I change the tire. I get good. When I get back home, me and Cindy, literally, because she's working, she was working, but it wasn't, you know, anything really major. Of all the money we could scrape together, it probably wasn't $20, $60. I mean, that was it. So I couldn't afford to have a flat tire.
Right.
But I'm really glad I went out to O'Gorman's the first time. I mean, it was a life-changing thing. And not about what he trapped. It was just the overall mental part about what he does.
Well, your mentality in O'Gorman's seems to share a lot, you know, because O'Gorman was always a charge hard, you know, mm-hmm. never look back kind of guy and just get it done. And you've developed that same attitude with your military and everything, career and the way you grew up. You took this second trip at a later time?
I did. I was doing a little bit better then. By that time, I was doing a contract for Marion County. So I was making $2,500 a month plus fur.
So you actually thought I was pork and beans on the way out.
I was actually thinking that I was, you know, Trump better watch out. Because at the end of the week, you know, we weren't having to eat ramen. You know, right. It was just the way it was. You know, Cindy, bless her heart, as long as we could pay her bills and we could do that, she you know, she didn't really get on to me too hard. So, that worked out really well. But when people think that I hear this with other people all the time, and it just, I don't know, because I don't like getting in other people's business, but the only reason he can do that, he's got money because he does this. Well, I hear that same thing about me, and that's insanity.
Well, I mean, that was my thought, again, because, you know, looking at, you know, I have a wife and kids and responsibilities and stuff, you can't just walk away and start trapping. My God, how are you going to pay the bills? You know, how do you catch enough fur? And how do you do all that stuff? There's too many ifs. What if that tire goes flat?
I'm telling you, I drank the O'Gorman Kool-Aid.
That must be some strong stuff.
Oh, if you totally drink the Kool-Aid, you grow about 10 inches. You have more endurance. Your head gets a whole lot thicker. But you will walk through fire to catch fur. And that was just that's the way it was. I knew how many raccoons I had to catch during trapping season to pay for rent. That's the way everything in my life was revolved around fur. I knew it, and it depended on what the price of fur was.
Okay, so what did you do in the summer months when you couldn't get out there and trap?
I dabbled around a little bit with some control work, but that's before that became normal, really. I mean, there was, you know, some farmers have beaver problems, and I'd talk them into a little bit of this or that. And then I was trying to do conventions. You know, I was the guy 18 years ago at a convention that had the Art of Professional Beaver Control DVD that I shot, edited on 3 separate VCR players, because I didn't know what else to how to put it together, and I had like 4 lures.
So this is long before the Predator Control Group.
Oh yeah, that
lures and all that you have.
Yeah, I mean, my first company, believe it or not, was called Big Country's Luscious Lures. I thought it was funny.
Luscious
Lures. Kind of a play on how bad lure smells. Luscious. Not the best marketing thing. Guys couldn't spell it, and they couldn't read it, and they didn't want to say it.
Yeah. So you had a lot going against you on that one. Any of those lures that you first started with still in production today?
Paul Placer, Muskie, and Enrager.
Enrager. Excellent. Yeah. So you started off early with those. You were able to keep that going. But I'm really dying to hear some more of the stories of what it took to get you to where you are today.
Oh, man. Well, one of them, I mean, I used to go, that's part of the reason I have such a kindred spirit with Jeff Dunlap.
Yes.
You know, you've been on the phone with him today where he's supposed to go skin, the roof fell in. Well, he don't know where he's going to go.
Yeah.
I've got enough DNA shared with Jeff Dunlap through whatever Kool-Aid that man drank. He's going to go down there, and he'll figure it out when he gets down there.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. That's what he said. I'm going. I don't care if I sleep in my truck. I'll figure it out when I get there.
And I've done that for 2 weeks.
That's hardcore.
Well, I won't say I always slept in the truck. If it wasn't raining, I slept under the truck to keep the frost off. But, you know, I've slept in tents, miserable. That is, because, you know, the thing about these trips, and keep in mind, back when I was doing this, gas was 80 cents a gallon. You know.
Right.
Fur was worth, you know, so little. You didn't have competition. I mean, who's going to compete with you for that?
Right.
You know, so there wasn't really any competition. I lucked up on some things where I got into bounties, and I got into some different ways that people started helping pay for things and to go about that. But I've stayed in tents. I've stayed in a horse trailer that first time it really rained bad, that's when I realized I should have scraped out the horse manure because it makes like a tea. And the Army Down sleeping bag is not waterproof. Mm. And no matter how much that sits in the sun, that smell ain't going away. So I've stayed in a horse trailer. I've stayed in a camper, which was nice. The worst one I ever went to, Frank Dockenbaugh was with me. He sells a lot of boards to Minnesota and Blue Ridge. You can ask him this. My brother lived in Jackson, Tennessee. West Tennessee is a great place to go trapping. They have a lot of fur. They have a lot of otter. They have a lot of beaver. They have a good number of raccoons. They have a lot of gray fox, a lot of cats. That's where Jay Lord's at, kind of that same area. So, and actually Frank ran over Jay Lord's, come to think of it, he ran over his wellhead when we went to visit him one time. So we set up to like 2 a.m. and we got that fixed. That's a different line of stories, but we went out there. My brother had a guy that had a hunting club. We could stay on his place. Didn't have running water, he told us. Had a roof. Keep you out of the weather. No electricity. So he gave us his directions. Frank comes down from Pennsylvania. We go out there, and I'm following the directions, and we're on this little bitty road in the middle of nowhere, and we look at this little thing on top of the hill. And I look at it, and I'm looking at the directions, and I'm going, well, that can't be it. So we go up down this road, I don't know, half a dozen times. And the guy told me on the back porch, his dad had a hunting blind, don't mess it up. So I finally pull on the bottom of the road, and me and Frank go up there and look, and on the back porch is 3 hay bales and a 5-gallon bucket as a deer stand. So I'm like, this must be it. I call Brandon. I go ask him if this, and this. And he said, that's it. We had a key. Don't know why they locked the damn thing, but we had a key. Me and Frank opened that door, and there was literally 2.5 inches of rat droppings on the floor. We looked up, and only half of the top of the building had a roof.
You surely didn't have to, like, stay in with no roof.
Well, you get creative. So we took a tarp, and we nailed it on one wall, and then and down to what little bit of roof there was, and then we nailed that to the other wall, kind of like a slope thing. Because in the far corner of this, there was a hole about the size of a 55-gallon trash can would take up. So we would run the water and the snow across that tarp down through the floor inside the room. It was the simplest way. So first we had to scrape all the rat droppings through the hole, best we could. And then we set our roof up. And it got cold. And I'm talking, guys in Wisconsin or something may think this is funny, but let me tell you, 5 and 10 degrees in very wet, humid West Tennessee is cold. It's colder than 20 below was in Fairbanks, Alaska. That's just miserable. So there me and Frank is in a slave shack. We come to find out what it was. It was an actual slave shack from the 1800s, sleeping amongst the rats. And I'm telling you, there was a racetrack going on that thing every night. And it rained near about every day. And our tarp would be a solid block of ice. We're afraid it would break, so we had to break the ice off this thing every night. Just go from one end to the other, breaking the ice and let it slide down our chute. And the only heat we had at 5 degrees was a Coleman single thing cooking stove.
Well, that was worthless.
Yeah, because I mean, we're just trying to, like, you know, heat Mars. And that's what we stayed. And we had to, when it was that cold, we had to skin there on the back porch.
How long did you have to stay there?
We ended up staying about a week and a half. We got like 3 major floods come in behind us.
Did you catch enough fur to make it worth your time?
No, that was a loss.
Just a total loss.
Yeah.
Wouldn't quit, wouldn't give up, just take the loss.
Right.
That's amazing. I can't imagine rats being in that building after you slept there one night.
With the snoring?
The way you snore.
There wasn't much snoring going on when you sleep with one eye open. Because I was afraid that there was going to be some infidelity going on, as big as some of those rats were.
Yeah, it could be bad. but I know how bad you snore. I thought a grizzly bear ate you last night and just didn't agree with you or something, because it was...
Didn't bother me a bit.
No. The rest of us in the camp heard it.
You know, I went several times to West Tennessee. I've stayed with families on some of the out-of-state trips. The first trip to New Mexico, when I went with Ed Blue, and I wrote some articles and stuff on that, what I didn't put in the article is Ed Blue had to fund that trip. Because the fuel at that time was, you know, up at a whopping $1.25 a gallon. And I think I had, you know, me and Cindy May had $400 to her name.
Right.
And it was early, so I didn't have fur to go sell to go do this. So he funded that trip. And then he got his money back when we sold fur.
Well, that was really nice of him.
It was, you know. But there again, when I hear about, like, that's the reason it was so funny to me when you said, you know, you must have started with money. I did the dangdest things to get by that you wouldn't believe. Like I said, I knew how many raccoons I needed for my rent. And that's the way that my life is revolving around that. When we had a car breakdown, I would call a fur buyer, and I would go get, I didn't have any money in the bank, so my only currency was fur. So if I had to go fix a car, you know, I would try to juice somebody down like you'd never believe, because that means I had to go out to the freezer and all that hard work and production, I'd have to load up and go sell it to be able to pay for a car thing. So when I did that year-long Blitzkrieg video,
yes,
that wasn't no joke. That was no joke, and that wasn't a Hollywood stunt. Her car was broke, and that's the only way I had money to fix it.
Now, did you have a buyer that would buy stuff from you year-round?
At that time, there was more buyers, and between one or two. One was better on coon, and one was better on beaver.
Okay.
And, you know, and then we, you know, I got lucky on the money aspect when, I remember when Otter... When Claudie Taylor came out with his Otter video, I bought his Otter video, and Otter was just breaking $40 to $45. Well, you got to think everything else we're catching's half of a $10 bill.
Right.
So that was big money. And then within 2 years, they were over $100. You know, people want to know how you want to know the fastest way to get good at trapping. Put your whole life on the line for it, as far as your bills and your house and your cars. I learned how to catch 100 otter plus a year because they were $100 a piece.
Absolutely. So, how did you get equipment at that time? Just stuff you've accumulated over the years? Or?
Yeah. Luckily, when I was in the pool business, I was buying equipment.
So you were thinking ahead even then?
Well, I wouldn't, you know, yeah, I mean, it's... You know, the first Martin I ever caught when I was in Alaska, I was making $1,400 a month before taxes were taken out. Milk's $3 a gallon up there back when your milk was 95 cents.
Wow.
You know, so $1,400 for a 30-day period in Alaska was nothing. And that first time that I sold a Martin to Dean Wilson in Fairbanks, Alaska. It was a $50 bill. I had like six or seven of them. Well, that was like half of my real bring home from the military. And I enjoyed doing that.
Right.
You know, I didn't have to walk 26 miles just for sport to go catch those Martin. I enjoyed it. The Red Fox were about 50-something, if I remember right. The real cherry red ones were.
Well, that's really good then.
You know, and so for me, from the beginning, it was about money. You know, it wasn't about just the sport. It was a curiosity, and then it was like I could really use the money.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, if I figure out what I'm doing, I could maybe make some money.
So you wasn't born a trapper. You didn't just learn this knowledge. You had to actually get out and do it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I did it through force. I didn't do it through finesse. You know, it was through force is mm-hmm. how I caught stuff.
Well, you know, even today, I noticed, I mean, you still have that same dedication and drive of, you know, if we're on a trap line and things get slow, it's not pick up, let's just go home.
So, yeah, it's setting more traps.
It's setting more traps, you know. I mean, that there's no, quit is just not an option.
Well, financially, I probably could, you know, on some things do that now, but.
Well, you're
from
a different
all
place.
That ahead of time, it just scalds me.
Right. So you got you got through the slave shack.
Mm-hmm.
You started doing conventions, started making some of your own lures.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure, being in this boat myself, people didn't probably take to your lures real fast. In the world is Clint Locklear?
No. And anybody that's listening to this, you can take what I'm getting to say one or two ways. One of them's the correct way, and one of them is you think your special way. And I'm going to let you pick out which one it is. The correct way of thinking about getting the lure business, don't expect to make any more than maybe buy a deer rifle at the end of the year for your first 10 years.
Because I can understand that.
That's about what realistically what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But in our age now, everybody wants everything right now. You know, they think because they can put a Facebook page up, or they can get a website, or they go to a couple of conventions, that they're going to be selling $100,000 of lure a year. Well, no, it doesn't happen that way. It right. didn't happen for anybody that way.
Right.
You know, it's just not the way it is.
So that makes it tough. So when you're going to conventions, you're actually sleeping in trucks. This isn't a hotel and eating out.
It is now. It wasn't then.
Yeah, now, but not then.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be like a bunch of gypsies. I'd be pulled up to Newt. I'd be sleeping in the back of my truck. I didn't have a van at that time. Newt would be in the back of his truck. And a lot of guys that actually go to motels now, because we paid our dues in all this and built up a customer base, we go to motels now. You couldn't have got us to go to a motel, because four nights of motel was probably the difference between us not making any money and be able to justify going to the convention.
Mm-hmm.
Or making a little bit of money and still not really be able to justify the convention, but we can at least eat on the way home. You know,
I think Newt still sleeps in his van just because.
He started going to motels a little bit.
Has he?
Of course, he's getting a lot older. It's got to be more comfortable on him. So,
yeah.
But yeah, the conventions, I'd go to any convention that was open. I mean, in most of them, you know, I'd make $200 or $300, you know, gross. And then, you know, I'll never forget, the first Southern NTA we did was in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, first year they did it.
Mm-hmm.
So I did my little booth fee, and I go down there, and Matt Jones was putting a convention demo on outside. Let me tell you, there wasn't anybody in there but I think me, Dave Edwards, two or three other dealers that were asleep. I mean, there wasn't nothing going on. Matt Jones had every single soul out in the demo area. And Dave Edwards comes over and he starts talking to me. Like, you got to think, I've got an 8-foot table. I've got one DVD and four lures.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it.
A lot of empty space.
I mean, it's pathetic when I look back on it, you know. No wonder no one wanted to buy it. I mean, really. But had a name no one could pronounce. Because I probably misspelled Luscious, my own business name, there ain't no telling. And he came over and we kind of hit it off a little bit. And He started smelling my lures. And have you ever met Dave Edwards before he passed away? He's a really neat guy. And if he takes a liking to you, he really takes a liking to you. If he doesn't take a liking to you, it's best not to be around him.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he was overly intelligent. Probably one of the smartest people in trapping I've ever been around. He's a good trapper, but he was like an intellectual lure maker. I mean, he would take stuff, he would try to figure out and actually go up and take it to colleges and have them tear it apart to see if he could tweak something. I mean, way above what everybody else is doing. And he started smelling my four lures, and he goes, "They work?" "Yes, sir." "Where'd you get the formulas?" And I go, "What do you mean, where'd I get the formulas?" He said, "Where'd you buy these from?" "I didn't buy them from anywhere." And for like 10 minutes, he was like a prosecutor trying to catch me in a lie on where I bought these formulas. And then he finally goes, "Well, how did you come up with this?" And I told him, I said, "You know, I would start with this, and I would go test it, then I would add this, and I would go test it, and until I got to where the best of whatever was working, and that's what it was." And he rattled off two or three things to me. "You know, this will stay better in there if you do this, because I know you're not doing it because it's not in there." And it really opened up my world of lure making, because now I had somebody I could call and go, "What about this or what about that?" And he would tell me. But I'll take that away. He'd never tell me. He would ask me more questions and make me go look at more answers. He would never come right out and tell me anything. He would be like a Yoda as far as the way he'd been about stuff. So if I had a question on something, he'd ask me another question. But if I followed his line of reasoning, I would somewhat get a general idea, then I could go figure it out. But he brought all that stuff together for me in the lure business, which really, you know, at that time, I didn't realize how valuable that was, because now I sell a lot of lure that I would have never been able to do if it wasn't for him to do that. And I think he took pity on me, because that's the only way I can describe what that table must have looked like, was pity. I mean, it's just what it was.
Yeah. Well, that's a great start. So you got through the hard times. There's a whole other thing, and I've told you several times, you need to really write a book of the beginnings of everything.
Well, I've actually been taking notes on that, about an audio book.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I think a lot of guys would listen to an audio book going down the road. Me and Jeff Dunlap actually were talking the other day, and we were going to talk to you and see if we couldn't get you a motivational DVD or something that, you know, when trappers are having bad days, they can just kind of put that in there. And,
you know, you may have scream at a microphone.
Exactly. You know, just have Clint Locklear screaming at him, telling him to get off their lazy butt and, you know, get it done and quit whining. And, you know, it's funny, but I think it would sell. You know, and at times we all could use that. So you've got through that point in life, and now you're starting to actually, you know, the Iowa trip where you're starting to put more together, and you're doing Coon. You know, how did you come up with doing the next step of videos to actually stay on the road? Is that year-long blitzkrieg that you did there? And
I was, the reason the videos came out the way they did, one a year, is because I drastically needed the money. And I was already doing the trapping.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made sense to me, if I'm already doing the trapping. And this was before the video market got all out of whack like it is right now. I mean, when I started doing videos, there might have been 15 guys doing it at the most. You know,
but none of them had information enough to really make you a successful trapper.
Mm-mm. No. And I started out, part of the reason I do videos, there's two reasons I do my videos the way, my first video was like this. I've looked at videos, and I'd look at the outdoor industry, you know, and it's the guys that are, you know, it spends half as much time someone picking them up at the airport as it does the 30-second shot of them shooting a deer. And when you get done, you've seen a deer, and you've seen a guy go to the airport and play music around the campfire and eat a steak, but you didn't know how to shoot the deer.
Right.
You know, and I'm looking at that, and I'm going, well, that didn't make very much sense. From the military, the way that we went about training, it was always very technical. So when we gave classes in the military, it was, you know, you would start off at a certain level and you would build that up throughout whatever your class was, and it was always very technical. So kind of in a way, I've been trained to do that.
Not to hold anything back.
Yeah, because I mean, you're giving a class on somebody in something in infantry, you know, you don't want to hold something back. If you have something that can help another guy even have a little bit better life-wise in that situation, or have a life when the situation's over, not that trapping's on that same level, but it, mm-hmm. you don't hold stuff like that back.
Right, that's your mentality of doing that.
But at the same time, though, Norm, you don't bullshit in those either.
Right.
You know, you don't make stuff up in the military class either.
Right.
So when I first started doing videos, I bought the ones that are on the market, a lot of them. I watched them. They were kind of like Claudia Taylor's was very instructional. But I made my mind up that I was not going to just make crap up to put on a video to sell a video. So I would go through stages where I would have an idea, and I would test it over and over and over again, and I would just like beat on that until it started working all the time, and then I'd have something new. Like people say, I'm always thinking outside the box.
You are.
When I'm thinking about trapping. Well, I'm just looking for a more efficient way, a simpler way, and a faster way. What you don't see with all this thinking outside the box is all the times I get my teeth kicked in. I mean, I went for 3 months and I wouldn't set anything but a number two coil spring for beaver.
That's it.
I can catch beaver with a number two coil spring.
I wouldn't recommend it.
No, I wouldn't either. You know, but I talked to Johnny Thorpe and he talked about doing it. So I kept playing around. When I went to snares, that's all I did was snares. I wasn't supplementing snares. So if I came to a situation and I looked at it like training. I still do. If I'm in the snare mode, say on beaver, I don't care what the situation is. I wouldn't even take a Conibara foothold with me when I was working for the county. Mm-hmm. So whatever situation I came up to, I had to figure out how to catch one in a snare. And there was a lot of Jethro and head scratching going on. Because a lot of places, snares just aren't very practical.
Right. Well, the best thing about your videos, even from the beginning, is that I found buying your videos, is that when I was done watching them like two or three times, I actually learned something. You didn't hold nothing back, and you were very straightforward. You wasn't keeping things from, you wanted other trappers to go out there and be as successful as they could possibly be. Mm-hmm. And that was something that the industry has never seen. Now that had to really upset a few people.
It does.
You know, and you're still doing that today with you know, your videos and everything that you're doing. You're not trying to hold nothing back.
Well, let me, and we've talked about this before, and I've never said this out in the open before. You want to know why I'm successful in what I do now? I know, since we've been down here, I've been called, what, a black man, but not in so good of terms.
Yes.
A pimp. I'm not a real trapper. I guess they think I got a fluke that calls all these animals in and they just skin themselves.
JR.
Yeah, I don't know where I hear that all the time and I'm just like, really? But you want to know why I am successful in it? I go out of my way to try to help people in any way that I can through the information that I put out so they're more successful when they trap.
And
if I hold stuff back, like hold it for hostage, really, mm-hmm. you know, or make someone come take instruction. Well, I've only got 52 weeks in a year, so if I did instruction, would there be 100 students a year, you know, to do that? You can put it on a video format, or when we go to the online training course format, and you can put it all out there, and that guy can go out and do better. Because regardless of what all these guys say about trappers, because, you know, me and Jeff's going to do a radio show, Why Are Some Trappers Schizophrenic, Borderline Communist, and Socialist?
Right.
And we're going to get into this a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But if you help a trapper, even if he's a new one and he's green and he has no idea what he's doing, and you get him out there and you give him some information where he can actually produce something instead of have heartaches, they're not all going to stay into trapping, but a huge percentage of them are. And if you give them that, what I've learned in my business, I make more money.
Right.
The more I give, the more I get. It's kind of like a church thing. But the difference, the way my videos and the way I do my content on the online, most people want to hold all the good stuff for hostage and make you pay for it, which people resent.
Yes.
You give it to them, they'll try your lure. If your lure does what it says, they'll keep buying it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, you know, I've given away video content alone. I could have had 20 more videos than I could have charged for, easy.
Right.
But I sell more videos because I give away that type of footage.
Well, that makes sense. You're still very approachable. You know, I've been going to conventions with you now for the last...
Now you've heard the internet. I'm arrogant and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. you know, and I make fun of you behind the scenes. I mean, you know, just picking at you about it. But, you know, on a very serious note, I mean, you have teenagers and young 12, 14-year-old kids that are standing back looking at you in a much greater light than you actually are. And they're actually scared to approach you, you know. And I've been with you at conventions, and fathers come up and go, you know, do you mind if my son, you know, gets a picture with you, or will you sign this for him? And, I mean, how does that make you feel?
Like I want to hide under the table. Honestly.
There has to be some pride there. I mean, it has to make you feel good.
There is in a way, but it makes me very uncomfortable.
Why?
Well, for instance, we're down here shooting the Trapping TV thing.
Right.
Scott and Mike and Brandon down here, we're all doing our thing. By the luck of the draw, or we can come up with whatever we want, but basically that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a piece of property that does not have the animals like we thought it would.
Right.
I mean, we got it set up, you know, tighter than an 8-day clock. Everywhere, every road and field you can find, there's traps on that place.
Absolutely.
Multiple traps. We're not catching what we should be catching all the time. Now, see, I know that the numbers this week aren't what they should be.
Right.
So when that dad comes up and tells me that, or what you're saying, what goes through my head more than not is, it's not as what you always think it is.
But you know, you can look at that the other way. You're honest and openly telling people that you have bad days, you have bad trips. Most trappers don't want to talk about that. They don't talk about that possum that they caught, or anything. And you're not bashful about that. You go somewhere and get your hat handed to you, it's like, well, you know, I give it my best, and it wasn't that. It didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so the honesty on that, you shouldn't feel that way. But it really is amazing. And you never get a swelled head. I've never seen you boast and get all outside of yourself. You never change. You always stay level. So that's that is a really a good quality.
And I see a lot of people get swelled heads.
Yes.
Three people learn their name and they're ready for a Hollywood contract.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, in society, we'll look at society as a whole. Whatever going on in society, we're still like the little bitty white speck on the bottom of the little bitty brown speck of whale crap in the way society looks at stuff.
You don't view yourself as Brad Pitt?
No. He ain't as sexy as I am.
There you go.
But, I mean, you know, and so what are you really blowing up about? You know, you're having pride at being good at catching animals. I totally get that.
Yeah.
And more of it is work ethic than it is a lot of the other stuff. And, you know, Brandon Johnson's here.
Yeah.
People want to know why Brandon Johnson's got so many people that don't like him on Facebook because he posts all those pictures. Let that little boy find an otter. He put 15 collars. That otter was not going to get around Brandon Johnson. It didn't. 2 days later, he skinned it.
Yeah.
You know, that work ethic is the reason Brandon Johnson gets those catches. You know, he's not a mythical 22-year-old born-again trapper. I mean, he works his tail off. That part you can be proud of.
Right.
But because people know who you are, or to think that, you know, somehow you're better than other trappers because you have DVDs out. I put those DVDs out because I was starving.
Yeah.
You know, people bought them and they liked them. So what in there am I supposed to get a big head about? I mean, I just don't get that. I mean, I really just don't get the swivel head syndrome. Because we're trappers. And I've been humbled so many times. I was out in Iowa, and I ran across a guy that I started running head-to-head competition with. Red O'Hearn told me to back off. Now, you know me well enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I bowed up like a rooster.
Mm-hmm.
Red said, back off. I'm like, why? He said, you don't want to play with this guy. I said, who is he? You don't know his name. I said, well, why am I worried about what he... Clinch, you won't catch a coon. You ain't got enough traps, energy, or time. Don't mess with him. Just go around him. Come to find out later, no one knows who he is unless you're like really good friends with Red and some of those guys. Catches over most of the time 2,500 to 3,500 raccoons. A couple hundred mink, 600-700 beaver, goes to Texas, catches way over 100 cats. No telling how many hundreds of coyotes. No one knows his name. I'm not near on the same level of trappers that guy is. I've been with Matt Jones, way more natural trapper than I am. I've been with Randy Smith. I'm not close to Randy Smith in his natural ability and machine ability as he is. So what am I going to get a big head about?
Well, that's a good point. A lot of guys don't look at it that way. In your situation right now, a lot of people would have that big swelled up head. And you're still approachable, so there's hope for you yet.
Well, I got a kid that calls me about once a month. One of these years I'm going to meet him. He's got to be 11, 12, 13 years old. I don't know how he's got my cell phone number, probably because he knows more about computers than I do. But he's got my cell phone number, and I'll answer it. It's Clint Locklear from Predator Control Group. And in a burst of like 3 seconds, he'll ask me one question in that little bitty high-pitched voice of his, like, will peanut butter catch mice? Yeah, it'd be better if you put some seeds in there. All right, thank you.
Hangs up.
So, I mean, I've got like a relationship with a 12-year-old I've never met. He calls me all the time. I can't always talk to people all the time, and I definitely can't answer all the emails that come in. But if I've got time, I definitely answer all
the emails. You have been accused of being too arrogant and big-headed to answer your emails and in voicemails. And
well, because of the way that I went about the internet, I've got such a big footprint on the internet because I've made that part of my business. I've forced myself to learn that,
mm-hmm.
how to do that. I put out a tremendous amount of content to try to get my name out to new trappers all the time. Google likes it. My email box when I get home from this trip from being away it's been 6 days.
Yes.
6 days. I will have a minimum after 6 days, if I'm lucky, only 800 emails from trappers asking questions. That's not counting junk mail and you need more Viagra and stuff like that. That's actual questions from trappers.
That's amazing.
So if I spend 3 minutes on each one of those emails, that means I don't get to sleep for 3 days. Right. I physically can't answer them all.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with phone calls. I don't take messages anymore. And it's not because I'm arrogant or don't want to talk to people. If you call me, because we're talking about our cage traps.
Right.
We're on the phone for 10 minutes. I've got three people that's already called during that 10 minutes between 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. So I got to listen to those three messages. Now I've got two more messages that come in by the time I get done talking with that guy. I'm not smart enough to keep up with that. So it's easier for me to look on the cell phone, and I just start at the top of this list and start going down and try to get back in touch with them. That's the reason I have a Bluetooth on me all the time. I can make lure and talk to customers.
If they don't mind the sound of tape.
Yeah, or if I'm packing orders, or out here, today we're driving around checking traps, I'm talking to customers as we're trapping.
Right.
You know, and I'll always try to be approachable as long as I can. But I will say, at 6 o'clock at night, I turn my phone off.
You'd have to.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've had guys. You can come in. This, yeah. I've had guys on Christmas call me Christmas morning and ask me a trapping question. I had your wife call me at 5:30 in the morning about 4 years ago, and I thought it was a family member or something happened to.
Yes.
Thanksgiving is a great, apparently, to call Clint Day. So I don't turn on the phone till 8 o'clock my time, and I turn it off. And on the weekends, I turn it off.
Right.
That's not being arrogant. That's because I'd like to be able to talk to my wife once in a while.
You got to have a life, too.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that is very true. You do have a very large following. You do get, but you are still one of the few people that you can actually pick up the phone and talk directly to in this business.
Well, I will tell you, I get tickled because a lot of guys will call up, and I don't know what they think is going on at my place. But they'll go, you know, I saw this video with that Clint Lockwood guy, and he was doing this. What was he using? And I'll go, well, it's put me in the first person because it kind of freaks me out when you put me in the third person and me and you're talking to each other. And they really have a hard time believing they're talking to me. Well, I didn't think I'd get to talk to you. Well, who else did you think he was going to talk to when you called me on my phone? Like your secretary or something. Dude, it's me and my wife. Or someone will have an issue with a packaging order. Well, someone must have screwed that up. Well, that someone was me, so I'll go firing. But you know, what can we do to make this right type thing? What do you mean you package it? There ain't nobody else here. It's me and my wife.
Exactly.
I mean, you've been at my house. You know there's... I do have Travis now, works 6 days a week ball and lure.
That's got to be some relief.
It is. That little skinny kid's getting skinnier by the week.
Yeah. You're going to wear him out, you're going to have to find another one.
Well, I keep trying to get him to take some days off. But I'm paying him like a grown man, and he ain't never seen money like that. So,
well, that's good. That's good for him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad he's got the work ethic to keep up. So what are we going to see out of Clint Locklear next? What is in the future? Do you have any more DVDs coming out? I mean, is there anything?
Well, my wife wants me to do DVDs. And I probably will, just to pacify her, I'll probably do a beaver or a muskrat or something this year.
You going to have time to try to put that out for this?
Well, it'll be filmed this winter. I don't have time to edit it until after trapping season, but it'll be filmed. And because I've never done a fur trapping beaver one.
Right.
And I've never done a muskrat one. And trapping, the way we trap muskrats is so radically different than I've seen on everybody else's video.
Yeah.
It's just different.
You don't have the high numbers.
No, and you don't have, it's not marshes.
Right.
You don't have muskrat huts. You don't have, you know, it's just radically different.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people who try to trap muskrats in the same type thing. So, but kind of what we're leading to now is, I think the future of information in trapping is going to be downloadable training courses. There'll be a call something different by different people. It'll just be a downloadable DVD. And I like this idea for the simple fact if I can put more money into making it, I can charge less money for it because I don't have to physically go buy a DVD, take the time to package it. They got to wait on the time to get it. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you got DVD players that won't play all certain types of DVDs and all that type of stuff. So I think in the future, what I'm looking to do, and I've already got David, my web guy, really chewing down on this. So like a year-long Blitzkrieg video may be $12.99, and you just download it.
Okay.
Or go to a site where you can watch it. I can't have you downloading it, but I mean you can watch it.
You can watch it on the computer.
On demand, a whole lot cheaper.
Excellent. So if you purchase it once, you're going to have, I'm assuming, have some kind of an account number, and
yeah,
you can go back and watch the same thing 100 times if that's mm-hmm. what you want to do.
Yeah. And that way, I think, because I think the only way videos are going to work anymore unless you have somebody with a personality of Matt Jones.
Right.
Or something like that. Is
And I enjoy Matt's videos, not to interrupt you. You know,
how can you not like him?
I know. I'm hoping to meet him one day. We were both at a convention, different story, but we didn't get to meet each other. But
I told him he's gay, dude. That ain't going to go over well.
That's not going over well with him?
No.
I need to be a stripper.
So, but, you know, I think that's going to be a lot simpler way to do it, and I think it can be like a trapping book. See, here's one thing that aggravates me about our industry and the trapping book. If I go to the business world and I want to download a business book, I can download one either to my computer or my Kindle.
Right.
Well, if you get out of the way we've done it since 1930, you, Norm, can make a trapping book. You can make it 1,000 pages long. You could have 6,000 color pictures in it. And you can charge and not cost you any more money over a one-page book and a 1,000-page book for $20. But if you had to go make that book with all those color pictures in it, you'd have to charge $300 a book because our market can't support
right
a book like that. And I think you're going to start seeing different things like that.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of guys talk about the Audible stuff. You know, I know that you do some of that stuff yourself because you're really into reading a lot. And I know when we go to Texas, you download a lot of stuff ahead of time. And an Audible book that guys are going down the trap line and they're listening to something to do with trapping. Mm-hmm.
I definitely think that's become way more popular. I mean, just look, if most guys that have trapping forms that I've had this conversation with that think they know what traffic is on the internet, if they knew the true traffic of trapping radio,
they
would run away.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's because of that right there. People are putting them in their MP3 players. They're putting them on disc. They're mm-hmm. when they're out in the fur shed.
A lot of guys in the fur shed. I'm hearing a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Guys are out there, you know, listening to you. And they'll start and listen over and over again. I mean, there's guys all the way in Alaska that sit and listen from first to the last.
I listen to the interviews when I'm packaging orders a lot of times. Mm. Just because...
You like to hear your own voice?
No, because I like to hear the other one. You know, like the stories like with Leon Smith and
right.
and the Cajun guy down in, you know, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. They're entertaining. Now, I don't want to hear about what the school board's mad because some kid made a gun-shaped piece of Pop-Tart.
Yes.
Don't really care. I'd much rather hear about how he's figured out how to catch more mink.
Yeah. And a lot of these older guys that you do have, and I don't mean offense to the older trappers, there's not any information on that. So when you actually sit down and talk to these guys, that's stuff that no one else has ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, there's some of the guys, you know, that are out there that have a name, you know, like Johnny and stuff like that. But the other ones that you have found and did interviews with, that's a big hit because there's nothing else written on these people.
And I love doing that. I mean, that every trapper's got a story.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you can get them to open up and really take ego off the mat, but really open up about what their story was. Every trapper's got a fascinating story. Every one of them does.
Right.
Especially the older guys because they did it in such a different time.
They were a lot tougher than we are.
Oh, a lot tougher.
There's just no way. I mean, no two ways about that. Now, I know we're pushed for a little bit for time. What else are we expecting to see from Clint?
Well, the project that I think is going to get a lot of traction really quick is Trapper TV, which is going to be an internet-based trapping show. Of course, you know about it because you're on it.
Absolutely.
Brandon just came in the door down here at Trapping Camp making all that racket, so he's the one will be in it too. And then Scott Adams and then Mike Kimball, which is, you know, world record 8-point, so he's really known in the deer world. And right. they're doing all the editing and they had a camera guy following everybody around. And they're making trapping, you know, like better than most deer shows.
It is really neat. You know, the best thing about being part of this is I get to trap with some of the most talented trappers in the country. Of course, looking at the bloopers tape, sometimes you just got to shake your head. You know, we learned what Brandon's nickname is this week. You know, Scott's out there challenging him to a possum competition.
Hey, Brandon, can I tell everybody what your nickname is?
don't care.
I ain't gonna do that to you.
I will. Baby Beaver. You know, and Scott's out there challenging, you know, possum trapping and all kinds of things. It's just, it's going to be great. It's going to be funny. It's going to be entertaining, but people are going to learn a lot from it, too.
Well, the coolest thing about, well, there's two cool things for this for me. One is because I am so serious about the trapping, and that's one thing I want people to understand when they think about me. I take trapping extremely serious, way more serious than it probably should be. I don't take Clint very serious at all.
Right.
You know, I really don't. Because I screw up as much as I get stuff right. But the second part of this show that's really cool to me, and the reason I said that before, is we're really showing the cutting up.
Yes.
Which no one's ever done on a video or any type of platform in trapping like that. It's always, you know, I'm the fire-breathing, long-lining, fur-eating, you know.
Absolutely. We're showing misses as much as catches.
Yeah.
We're showing mistakes and things that happen to us on a day-to-day basis, just like it does everybody else.
I mean, I'm sure they're going to show that conner bear going off on me twice.
I would.
And I'd probably have to bleep out what I said, but they're you know, they're going to, I mean, I busted my butt on the rock, you know, and when Mike Southernized Blitzkrieg, you know,
exactly.
I like turn on the camera, I got to make fun of this.
Yep.
No one's ever seen anything like that in a platform.
No.
That we're doing in the quality. Holy cow, the quality that Mike's bringing.
It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's TV quality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know,
well, it is. Equipment. Everything we're filming is with TV cameras.
Exactly. Yeah. We're using the same equipment. So we're lucky to have Mike and involved in that knows enough how to edit and do all the things that he's doing. You know, so that takes some pressure off you because you're usually the editing guy.
Well, that's the second part that's cool. I'm just a guy trapping on this one.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of coordinating some stuff, but really the editing, the producing, the filming, all that's on Mike and Will, the camera guy.
Right.
You know, I just get to show up. I didn't know where they were at. I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know where we were staying. We didn't even get a key to our own place today, and we're leaving tomorrow.
Exactly.
Didn't bother me a bit. Not in charge of this one.
Well, I don't know if that's a disclaimer or something you're proud of.
Well, it's nice for me because it's not like when we go to Texas with our school and you got to coordinate all that, and you got to make sure everybody's happy, and you got to make sure everybody's there, and you got to, you know, all that is it can be stressful. And this, it's just, where do you want me to go?
Right.
You know, Mr. Producer, what do you want me to do?
That does make it nice. So we're looking forward to the new DVD. Is it going to be one or two? Probably one this year we can expect?
Yeah, I've got to do something or Cindy's going to kill me.
Right. And yeah, you need to take care of her because listening to your background a little bit, I don't even know why in the world that woman stayed with you.
I don't either.
But there must be something there. And she's still with you today and you got a good woman there. She can still put up with you. So we're going to expect to see a DVD this spring, maybe summer.
We hope.
We hope. Everything works out. Trapping TV, when's that going to start?
It'll be somewhere after the first of the year. We're looking at doing 13 episodes, probably 25, 30 minutes an episode. And not to hand on this or anything, but to me it's just really neat because, you know, we'll be filming when we're down in Texas.
Right.
You know, they got Brandon where he's trapping muskrats and coons in Ohio, and he's on the river in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Mike and them were snaring, Scott's getting ready to go snare cows inside the city limits.
Right.
You know, and Mike's going out to run a cow line in the snow of Ohio.
Right.
Well,
and there's other places in the States these guys are going as well.
Yeah, so it's going to be, I mean, all over the map. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be extremely entertaining to watch. Because that's just watching the footage. We laughed.
Oh, every absolutely.
Night looking at the footage.
Yeah. So how do we keep up with, you know, tell the listeners how to keep up with trying to find when this is going to happen. Where do they go to?
Well, we're gonna build a website. I've already got the domain for trappingtv.com. Yeah, but we're also going to have what's going on Wolfer Nation and on Trapping Radio.
Okay.
So people can go watch it. The first year, it'll probably just be on YouTube. We're building something really cool and we just want people to see it.
Excellent. So we don't even get paid for all of our hard work.
Ain't no one getting paid.
Absolutely. That's great. Anything else in closing?
No. Just, you know, have fun whatever you're doing. I mean, don't take yourself too serious in this game. Because if you are, it's pretty much just in your head anyway. So everybody else is going to be lost. So enjoy yourself when you're out doing this thing. And don't get, you know, there's a lot of guys now that just get so petty about different stuff. And it's just not a happy way to live. So when you're, you know, dealing with trappers, remember who you're dealing with. You know, don't treat trappers like they're antis. Treat them like they are brother trappers. Excellent. And everybody will be doing good, and just go out there and nail a bunch of fur.
Well, that sounds like really solid advice. I've had a good time interviewing you. It went better than it was. Normally, you're putting me on the spot. And, well, this is a nice change.
You screwed up, dude, because you probably could have put me on the spot somewhere or another, and you wasted it.
Well, you know, paybacks are tough, and I'm learning with you very quickly. I may get you today, but you will come back and get me tenfold. So, keep this in mind. I was very generous.
All right, man.
Take care.
I said, Grandpa, what's this picture here? It's all black and white, and it ain't real clear. Is that you there? He said, yeah, I was 11. And times were tough back in 35. That's me and Uncle Joe just trying to survive a cotton farm and a Great Depression. And if it looks like we were scared to death, like a couple of kids just trying to save each other, you should have seen it in color. Oh, and this one here was taken overseas in the middle of hell in 1943. In the wintertime, you can almost see my breath. That was my tail gunner, old Johnny McGee. He was a high school teacher from New Orleans, and he had my back right through the day we left. If it looks like we were scared to death, like a couple of kids just trying to save each other, you should have seen it in color. Should have seen it in color. This one is my favorite one. This is me and Grandma in the summer sun, all dressed up the day we said our vows. You can't tell here, but it was hot that June. That rose was red and her eyes were blue. And just look at that smile, I was so proud. That's the story of my right there in black and white. And if it looks like we were scared to death, like a couple of kids just trying to save each other, you should have seen it in color. Yeah, pictures worth a thousand words, but you can't see what those shades of gray can cover. Should have seen it in color. but you can't see what those shades of gray keep covering. You should have seen.